You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Thanks to an HHS ruling, pharmacists now have the authority to prescribe and administer certain COVID-19 treatments. We'll talk about that next on Locked On Pharmacy.
You are listening to the Locked On Pharmacy podcast, the insider's view into the world of pharmacy.
This is Frank Fortin for the American Pharmacists Association. Earlier this year, several pharmacy organizations, including APHA, asked the HHS to let pharmacists order and administer therapeutic treatments for patients who have been exposed to COVID-19. And recently, HHS said yes. This is a big deal. It's the latest in a series of rulings that dramatically expand pharmacists' roles during the pandemic. With me to discuss this is Elisa Bernstein, Senior Vice President of Pharmacy Practice and Government Affairs for APHA. Elisa Bernstein, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So, Elisa, what did the HHS actually do?
This was a really big deal for pharmacies and pharmacists. The federal government, or HHS, they continue to recognize the access, the value, the resiliency of pharmacists and pharmacies. And when HHS authorized recently a therapy for post-exposure prophylaxis, and healthcare systems were at capacity, and they were in dire straits because of this more recent surge, pharmacists recognize that we can relieve this burden. And so APHA and other pharmacy groups, we wrote to HHS, called them, met with them, and said, put us in, coach. Pharmacists can help here. And so what was announced recently is that, at least for the duration of the pandemic, licensed pharmacists, we got the ability to order or prescribe and administer certain COVID-19 therapeutics. And then qualified pharmacists, pharmacy technicians and licensed or registered pharmacy interns can administer these COVID-19 therapeutics. And there's a couple of caveats. First, the products have to be authorized, approved, cleared, or licensed by FDA. Second, we can only administer them IM, sub-Q, or oral. So IV route is not covered under this news. Certain training must be completed. Some of it is training that most pharmacists, interns, and technicians already have if they've gone through the immunization training, but there are some additional elements that are needed. The technician or intern has to be immediately and readily available, so they have to be on site, but it could also be supervision by other qualified healthcare providers. As with other authorities that pharmacists got, we have to have current CPR certificates, and then there's some record keeping requirements. So right now, this new authority only applies to certain monoclonal antibody therapies, but it could include other therapies that are authorized or approved in the future.
So the therapies themselves are important. Why else is this important to pharmacy?
Pharmacy and pharmacists have been asking for test and treat authority permanently in various ways to Congress and in the states for a long time. What this is, it's test, vaccinate, and treat. We now have the ability across the country to do this. And this is our opportunity to demonstrate that pharmacists can provide this important patient care services, and that we need to make these permanent. We've been trying on several levels. APHA and the pharmacy community have been trying to demonstrate that we can do this after the pandemic. And this is the opportunity to do it during the pandemic, collect data, collect case study, collect information, and really demonstrate that these should be made permanent. The other really important thing about this new announcement is that it's forward thinking. So right now, there are only certain monoclonal antibodies that are for IV and subcutaneous use. But when an oral therapeutic is authorized or approved, it'll be a lot easier for pharmacists around the country to order and prescribe those products.
You said something very important in the middle of that, which is across the country. So this supersedes any other state regulation or authority that may exist that might be more restrictive than this, correct?
Yes, it does. So the PREP Act, which is the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, it's been pharmacy's friend during the pandemic because this law allows the secretary to issue a declaration that extends liability protection to people, to companies that manufacture, distribute, or administer medical countermeasures against whatever the public health threat is or emergency. And in this case, it's a COVID-19 pandemic. So in March of 2020, right at the start, the secretary declared that the PREP Act, engaged the PREP Act for COVID, covering tests, vaccines, and drugs. And that there have been various amendments. So you've been hearing all these different authorities coming from four pharmacists, technicians, and interns through various amendments. And so what these different amendments are doing is providing immunity from liability related to whatever is covered in that amendment, whether it's testing, immunization, licensure, supervision. And in the most recent one, that immunity of liability is for the what I talked about earlier related to certain COVID therapeutics. And preemption is the key here. So that's how it gets across the country. And what preemption does is under this law, any state requirement that is more limiting related to licensure or scope of practice that would be that would stand in the way of a qualified person from prescribing, dispensing, or administering these tests, those are overridden, and that's basically what preemption is. So the federal law takes precedence here if the state is more limited, and that's why this is really important. So if under your current scope of practice, you are not allowed to prescribe these products then, or even do testing or vaccination for certain age groups, what the PREP Act did is overrode those state laws and allows pharmacists across the country, as well as technicians and interns, that if you follow the letters and the requirements and the guardrails in these amendments, the liability protection applies.
So let's talk a little bit about the therapeutics themselves. We're not going to get too much into the clinical aspects of this, but if you could talk in a general sense, what these therapeutics are and what's available, what's covered by this right now?
Yeah, so the Ninth Amendment, which is the latest amendment, it covers COVID therapeutics that are authorized, approved, licensed, or cleared. And those are terms for FDA related to drugs, biologics, or devices. So this applies to products that prevent, treat, and COVID-19. And like I said earlier, this only applies for those therapeutics that are given subcutaneously, intramuscularly, or orally. And it doesn't apply to any therapies that are currently authorized or approved that are given intravenously. That said, pharmacists can administer intravenously under certain scope of practice within states. So if the state allows it, then pharmacists can administer intravenously under the provisions allowed under your state. And it is happening in clinics and ambulatory care settings, in health systems, in offices. So, but for pharmacists to prescribe, that it's limited to sub-Q, IM, or oral.
And there are some tests that are needed before these therapeutics can be prescribed, right?
Yeah, so it's important because one of the elements of the liability immunity that's in the act is that the product has to be used according to what's in the approval or authorization by FDA. And in for the current product, which right now is REGEN-COV, which is really the only monoclonal antibody therapy that this applies to for sub-Q route, the information in the authorization says that it apply, you have to have SARS-CoV-2 viral testing, which are molecular tests such as PCR tests or antigen tests. And antibody tests are not considered direct and can't be used to diagnose COVID. So basically a PCR or antigen test is what's needed.
Great. And what about training? What is needed to administer these? What kind of training is needed to administer these therapeutics?
According to the Ninth Amendment, you have to complete an ACPE approved practical training that includes hands-on injection technique, clinical evaluation of indications and contraindications of the COVID-19 therapeutics, a recognition and treatment of emergency and adverse reactions to the therapeutics, and then any other additional training that is required by FDA in the approval or authorization. So what that means is if a pharmacist, an intern, or a technician has taken, for example, the APHA certificate training for immunization delivery, that meets the requirements for the hands-on injection technique and a general recognition and treatment of emergency reactions to COVID-19 therapeutics. Just recently, APHA released a CE program for specific to this Ninth Amendment for COVID-19 monoclonal antibody assessment and administration. And this adds the additional training that's needed for pharmacists, technicians, and interns specific to COVID-19 therapeutics. And so this would meet the requirements of the new authority. It addresses the clinical evaluation of indications, contraindications, and adverse events. The program's free. And to access it, I'm going to do a plug here. You can go to elearning.pharmacist.com/library. That's elearning.pharmacist.com/library. And we'll put, maybe if you can put a direct link in the show notes, that would be great. And we are also at APHA. We have a really, really great, I'm a little biased, but it's a really great library of resources specifically for pharmacists that we have been developing and updating throughout the pandemic. And we have some practice resources that are new specific to this, and we've updated some. And if you could put that link in the show notes, that would be great too.
Will do. Alisa, one of the questions that may come to mind for pharmacists listening to this is, what's the reimbursement looking like for these therapeutics?
Really good questions. Pharmacists are always wondering how to get paid for their services. And this is in some ways a work in progress. So the reimbursement for monoclonal antibodies therapies under Medicare is more clear than under Medicaid in the states or under private. Medicare will cover and pay these injections the same way it covers and pays for COVID-19 vaccines. And the cost of the product, the monoclonal antibody, is covered by the federal government. So that's good. So there's no cost associated with the product itself. So it's the administration. The administration is under Medicare Part B. So pharmacies that are enrolled in Medicare Part B can submit claims for administration and then being reimbursed. And the costs are relatively good. Reimbursements are about $450 for administration at a clinic or a pharmacy setting, and $750 if the therapy is administered in a home setting. Depending on where you are in the country, that may vary a little bit, but that's the set amount that for Medicare. The indication, whether it's for treatment or prophylactic exposure, does not impact the reimbursement amounts. So that doesn't factor here. But there are different codes. So you need to pay attention of what code is included. Reimbursement is also available through HRSA's uninsured program. And so we encourage pharmacies to get enrolled in that program. And if you're giving COVID vaccines now, you're likely to already be enrolled in this program, but that's a really important way to get some coverage as well. The health plans and Medicaid is a whole different story. So CMS advises that private plans and Medicaid pay out at the same rates as Medicare, but that's not always the case. And a lot of this still is a work in progress. For Medicaid, it varies by states. So states are addressing this and looking at it right now. Same with the private health plans. You know, they all have to cover it, but at what rate they're covering it is another question. And APHA has a resource, a very detailed comprehensive billing resource that outlines how to enroll in Medicare Part B and the HRSA program and other information about billings, and that hopefully you can put that in the show notes and access that as well. And again, as we're getting more information about the billing situation, particularly for Medicaid and private, we'll be sure to update our resources.
So one final question, Elisa. Do you envision that many pharmacists will be ordering and administering this?
So for the current products that are permitted, it involves 4 subcutaneous injections. That means it's, one, you've got to have the appropriate room or area for privacy. You have to have the time, because after the injections are given, you need to have the patient be there for a certain length of time to watch for adverse events. So I think this is an opportunity, not for all pharmacists that we'll take advantage of, but there are a lot of pharmacists in parts of the country where these health systems are really stressed and they're in dire straits. And we know that this is being already used by pharmacists across the country. And as I said earlier, pharmacists who are also administering the IV route. I think that when an oral therapeutic is authorized, then pharmacists across the country will be jumping in and using it, because it'll be a lot easier. But for this, it provides that opportunity for pharmacists, particularly in those communities that are stressed, medically underserved communities, rural communities, where the pharmacists can really, really help and jump in.
Well, Elisa Bernstein, thank you very much for joining us again. These are very exciting times, lots of changes in the practice of pharmacy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. As a pharmacist, really excited about this and really excited for pharmacists around the country.
And that's it for this edition of Locked On Pharmacy. For more information about these and other matters relating to COVID, visit pharmacist.com/coronavirus. For the American Pharmacists Association, this is your host, Frank Fortin. Thank you for joining us.
This podcast has been brought to you by the American Pharmacists Association, the largest professional association of pharmacists in the United States.